we're in adoption phase and we finally enabled Bitcoin to be adopted. It's just getting started. This is a year, many years in the making. There's so much pent-up demand, which also means so much of that wealth spills over into altcoins and meme coins. So it's like, you like it or not, this is the way of the market.
This is euphoria levels.
This episode is brought to you by Perennial Finance, the on-chain DeFi primitive redesigning derivatives for the DeFi native. You'll hear more about Perennial later in the show.
All right, guys, welcome to another episode of 1000X. Today we have a special guest that a lot of you probably already know, but we're super excited to chat with because he's always got spicy, interesting takes.
For those of you who aren't watching us on YouTube and you're just listening, Alex Krueger is literally joining us from inside the Matrix. You've got one hell of a setup back there, dude. That is a lot of screen chart.
Yeah, and to be honest, I have 10 screens, right? The whole thing is plastered. And I'm feeling that I need more screens because to trade something, or if I have something on my book that is not like dust, I need to see the chart. I'm just that kind of person, right? I just need to see the chart all the time. And there is no more room anymore.
How many things at any moment do you have in your book that you're trading that you need that many charts?
I have 100 right now.
A lot.
Yeah.
Damn.
It's now peak. Like 21 was, it got to like 70.
So how are you managing, you know, you were saying you had 70 line items during the bear market. Now you have 100.
No. In 21, not the bear market. Bear market, I got to come almost entirely out.
Okay, so how do you think about expanding risk in bull markets and consolidating it and cleaning things up or getting out in bear markets? Like, just broad framework, and then we can drill into this particular
bull market. When things start getting frenzy and I start getting concerned, I start consolidating. That simple. Start consolidating into things that are liquid and hedgeable. That I can manage more quickly without having to scramble around. I don't think the time is here yet.
Did you have so in the 22 bear market, were you trading other macro assets as well? Were you, you know, hedging crypto length with oil length? Were you, do you think cross asset or all crypto?
No, I haven't traded oil since 2020. It was still mostly crypto since it's been mostly crypto since 2020. And it was mostly Bitcoin and ETH, basically trying to trading the it was more short-term trading, right? 21 to 22, basically, to be honest, it's like I called the bottom a little bit too early in basically end of May. And so I was wrong by 3 weeks. That was a very memorable trading experience because I did manage to turn around and trade the dump, but it was very hectic and difficult, and it did at the beginning cost me a lot of money. I remember going into the big dump that started on a Friday, on CPI Friday. Mm. I was long to the tits. On ETH on top of that. I spent the rest of the year trying to basically get the bottom, and when failing, getting out. I was like, this is it, we're here. And eventually it worked and it paid off, but it was very, very difficult.
What are your metrics to determine, like, why did you think that this was the bottom? We're talking, I assume, about May 2022 post Luna crash.
Yeah, exactly. Was the Luna crash? People died. Usually, when people die at such a large magnitude, it's the bottom. It's almost always the way it happens. And what I didn't know was that 3AC was about to blow up. Which, by the way, some people predicted it, and if it was a big mistake, I think, from my side was not being well informed, because you could have known that it was that was likely to happen. Same thing as people were talking when that happened. Alameda is bust. People were talking about it.
I remember those rumors, but thinking back to then, it was so hard to verify those rumors. You'd have some people say there's rumors that they're bust, but there's no way that would happen. There's no way. It was like being in the fog of war at the time. It's very hard to see and understand and get the information that you wanted. But I mean, what were you doing at that time to try to assess the market? You know, when you're in that type of situation.
Here's what were you doing, but what I was doing is talking to people. What I always do, talk to as many people as possible. And the Alameda, FTX insiders, I talk to insiders on the good term, people that work for them. They didn't know. They didn't think that was going to happen. They thought everything was fine. So clearly my sources were not right. And I failed to get to the right sources. Would have made would have been worth quite a few millions getting that right. But, you know, we know how it went. What about you guys?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was very, very similar. You try to talk to people, but nobody will ever give you information straight up unless they really, really, really like you or you have a very good relationship with them. So what I do is when I talk to as many people as possible, I try to cross-reference as many stories as possible. Are the people that I think are going to say the same thing saying similar things? Or are they saying different things? And then normally in crypto, where there's smoke, there's fire. And so if there are just too many occurrences where the stories don't match up, or people are saying slightly different things, or there seems to be some nervousness in the air, then you just start to step away. I mean, I remember with I did not in any way, shape, or form predict or get the FTX blow up, because in my mind at the time, my thought process was, hey, even if Alameda blows up, there's no way that Sam would have put FTX at risk. Like, it just wouldn't have happened. So I was just completely caught blinded by that. But the 3AC issue was, the moment they started going around trying to raise money for the GBTC trade again, that was a huge red flag. Hey, why are you doing this? Who are you raising it from? What the hell is going on? Do you just need capital? Why are you being so pushy? That was a weird one, for sure.
So maybe that's a good sign when you're getting close to a major blow up that's about to occur, when you see people who are supposed to be the strong hands in the market doing sketchy, weak-handed type stuff. That's one signal of a bottom. Alex, I actually, after the Luna crash, I thought I navigated the Luna crash quite well. I sold Luna near the highs. It looked Ponzi-esque, got out of that, reduced risk. So I missed that. I didn't really get hurt on that dump, or only got hurt a little bit. That's like you, when I thought, okay, there's so much blood on the street now, it's over. Like, it's time to buy. And like you, I had to get out of the way of yet another freight train in order to stay alive. That was crazy. That sell-off, like, it was weird, because normally in these things, like, you know, I'm sure you like I did, we've traded through the 2008 crisis. When the dominoes start to fall, they fall pretty quickly, just one after another. But in this one, Luna blew up, then 3AC, like, things just puked, funding went insane, then everything kind of calmed down, we flatlined. Then, like, bizarrely, out of nowhere, 3AC blew up. And then there was another month or two of, like, nothingness and calm when you could have said, all right, this is it, this is the bottom. And then FTX just immolated itself. So, yeah, that was tough. So basically, if I could paraphrase what you're saying, your process is to consolidate risk from many line items into few or zero when things get shaky and volatile, and that's when you start picking up the phone. That's probably good for our listeners to know.
And when every now and then when things get bad, I just get the fuck out. Like, I start scrambling, pressing, and I get out and I reassess.
we've talked about this on the pod a little bit, just like a toxic risk framework. When you look at your book and you're like, I'm not going to try to wait for 10% higher levels. Like, I'm just going to get out of this bad risk. It's toxic right now.
Yep. Like a good example is FTX. Like, we didn't need to actually predict it. Predicting it would have been worth a fuck ton of money. But once it started, we had so much time to react, because it got panicky with ETH at 1500. That's when it started. Like, it actually, I think it started with ETH at like 50, upper 15. So we need to like put the daily. But it got bad, like panic at 15s, and it just kept on going down. It was so much time to react and short or hedge. So that's the thing with black swans is we don't need to actually predict a black swan. We just need to have it wired as traders. Our system has to be wired in a way that we can instinctively react very, very fast in a good way, just like a tennis player reacts to a tough ball in certain places. And I think that's objective, is training ourselves.
Yeah, comes with a lot of time and practice. You know, it's hard to predict out a month in advance, 2 months in advance, 3 months in advance. But once you see the direction it's heading, understanding that switch in the market. I mean, I want to ask. I mean, speaking of switches in the markets, we've got BTC at 73, ETH at 4K, meme coins are ripping all over the place. You have 100 positions in your book. I probably have more than I've had in, you know, a year. How are you thinking about this in terms of froth? Because, I mean, honestly, to me, it seems like we're getting there to the point where I probably want to start thinking about taking off length. But
we are at insane levels, I think. There's a caveat that makes it a little bit less insane, which is basically if we're looking at funding rates, like the 3 month annualized futures basis. Right now at 25, 25 is crushing levels. But if you think about it, risk-free rates are at 5. So it's 20, not 25 or 21. So it's not as frothy as we, but it's still really crazy frothy. Meme coins are going insane. The thing is, the ETF flows are so large. And in my opinion, they're just beginning. That sustains and enables this level of absolute insane degeneracy. That's what's happening here. If you're concerned, this is actually a good place to basically hedge your spot holdings using futures or perps to unhedge once it flashes, and you know, hedging part of it, not the entire book. A small percentage, actually. But that being said, I think it makes a lot of sense to keep on running into the halving, at least. So, things are crazy, but things can get crazier. And we make the most money in the part where it gets really, really fucking crazy. So if we're just going rational, just getting out to protect profits, yeah, that works. But you leave most of the money on the table. What do you guys think?
I normally run a very clean crypto book. I don't like to have a lot of line items like you. I like to keep it super concentrated and tidy. I have started diversifying like you. So let's just talk about Bitcoin for a second. I am so bullish, I can't see straight. I think that these ETF flows like you have just begun. And I think if you look at some of the metrics on Glassnode, like Coindays Destroyed, or just the Farsight Investors ETF dashboard, what you're seeing right now is long-term hodlers of tokens taking some profit at, you know, all-time highs. And they're effectively passing their tokens to the BlackRock ETF, which is new long-term holders, like people in their retirement accounts who are not going to turn around and sell if we rally another $10,000 or $20,000 in Bitcoin. So ultimately, I think that once you work your way through that, you know, kind of like hodler selling on the offer, which from the CDD metric I just described, like we are doing that. Like it's happening already. You're getting through that supply. The next, like the only seller left is miners, and they're about to get their block rewards cut in half next month. So I think that, you know, we've had 11 billion worth of ETF buying right now. The next 11, you know, we rallied $30,000 a token on that inflow. The next 11 billion worth of ETF buying, I think, could send us up much more than $30,000 a token, specifically to your point about how when markets get crazy and parabolic, you make most of your money toward the end of that kind of like quadratic looking move. And so I've decided that while the music is playing before it stops, and while these ETF inflows continue, I am going to be a degenerate. And so like I lit up my Phantom wallet, which I hadn't touched in a while, funded it with like some random, like I had some E flying around from Friendtech. I had some Stellar that, you know, I just cleaned all that shit up, put it all into Joe Bowden a couple of days ago. Cause I thought that was the political sort of counterpoint meme to the Trump token, which had gone up to, you know, whatever, $400 million market cap. Like, and this thing was trading at 15 million market cap. I was like, all right, I'm just going to go as big as I can on this little shit coin. And I'm just kind of playing around with those things. This is the first time I've actively traded crypto in over a year.
12 million volume.
Yeah, $12 now. Like, I'm getting degenerate, which is a sign of how ripe the opportunity set is. Like, I'm a fucking terrible trader, crypto trader, compared to you guys. And I think I see opportunity at this point. I don't know, Avi, what do you think?
I tend to agree with you, but I mean, the two simple numbers are that there's 6 billion of open interest on Binance and 4 billion of open interest on Bybit. And that is short-term capital. And that will leave at some point. And so once we stop seeing momentum, you will get some level of closing and you will get this to reverse. And so while I do agree with you that I'm very bullish, I think we're pretty overdue for a 10-15% pullback at this point. Maybe more, maybe a 20-30% pullback. You get these pretty frequently in bull markets. And so I think it's just important to remember not to get too overlevered. I think at this point, I'm just playing in spot bags. I wouldn't have any leverage on in my book other than, you know, what I think of as synthetic leverage through meme coins. Because I am nervous. I mean, basically, we have a tremendous amount of buildup. But that being said, I'm conflicted because normally when you break through all time highs, it's a rip fest.
And so after the halving, it's a rip fest.
Yeah, the halving normally takes a bit, though. Normally takes 1 to 2 months.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, in general, I'm still bullish, but I'm not, you know, over the top. I'm definitely very bullish on a bunch of shitcoins, though. That is where I am bullish.
So, Alex, you know, you told us about how you trade craziness and how you trade when shit's hitting the fan in a bear market. How do you trade like Pico bull markets where shit is hitting the fan and we're getting crazy volatile and 30% pullbacks like Abhi was just talking about, followed by 100% rallies? How do you trade that?
I have no leverage at the moment. Leverage is gone. It's too expensive to have leverage on the book. And I'm very worried that a little push can drive a very large crash. I'm surprised, for example, yesterday we didn't push further. We had 13 BTC, minus 13% on BTC, minus 18% exactly 8 days ago. It was intraday. It was insane. I fully agree that we're going to see at some point, the thing is, it's impossible to predict when this is going to happen. But at some point, inflow is going to slow down. They may reverse a little bit. And then with this built up, we get a very large flash, 20% at least. I think 35% makes sense because things are really insane.
Wait, hang on. I have a question for you about that. My way of playing that is like you guys, I'm not levered right now. So I'm just going to sit there and take it and hopefully buy a little bit more on a crash. I'm not going to like sell and then try to rebuy and dance between the raindrops. How are you going to play it?
I've done it on two occasions in the last. I hedge X percentage of my book, basically 20-30%. Not more, because if in case I'm wrong, it's too costly to get completely out. And then I rebuy on the dip. So it's happened twice in the last month. One was right before the 18% flash on ETH 8 days ago. I was waiting specifically to reload at in the 58s or equivalent on other coins. It didn't hit my bids, so I manually redeployed everything. I actually levered up and then got the leverage out, in the next couple of days.
And what's your signal to rebuy? Is it just when funding collapses back to sort of flattish?
I'm looking at quite a few funding metrics. Funding is too slow. I'm not looking at funding, actually, because funding resets every hour or every 8 hours. So I'm looking at basis that reacts on I'm looking at second, actually, second chart.
CME basis?
No, Binance, because there's more liquidity there. I mean, that's the main one, also CME, but the main one is Binance. Then another example is on Monday night, I took off 25%. I basically hedged 25%, and I reloaded at the top, because it didn't get to where I wanted, and I was expecting continuation. It didn't happen. I reloaded at the top. So yeah, sometimes I buy the top.
I did buy the top.
Yeah, I bought the top on Solana as well, so it's working out.
This episode is brought to you by Perennial Finance. Perennial is quickly becoming one of the go-to derivatives platforms and liquidity layers for all of DeFi. So let me tell you a little bit about them. There are kind of three things you need, right, when you're thinking about a place and a platform to trade on. First one, great trade execution. Second one, low fees. And third, of course, an on-chain permissionless platform. And Perennial nails all three of those buckets. With the launch of Perennial V2, they've made all of that possible by introducing a ton of new features, such as faster oracles, which reduce trade execution to seconds, lower fees, competing with major centralized exchanges and minimizing fees for both takers and makers. Fully modular markets, which allow the protocol to support any price feed out there. And fourth, cash settled, right? The trades are cash settled in USD, not in crypto. Perennial allows you, the trader, to gain access to deeper liquidity with only a fraction of the TVL. How it works is that Perennial enables a two-sided market made up of both traders and liquidity providers, right? Traders deposit the assets to get levered exposure, while liquidity providers provide these pools of capital to earn fees for taking the other side of the trader position. Perennial allows you to trade crypto, perps, FX, and coming soon, NFTs and more. Backed by some of the best investors in the industry, Perennial is a must checkout platform if you're a crypto trader. Go check them out by clicking the link in the description. Give 1000X some credit. Go check out Perennial. You're going to love them. All right, let's get back to the show.
What's your view on the cycle now? I mean, we've had Bitcoin basically lead everything for a while, but now on a day like today where Bitcoin's up 2%, seeing Solana up 6, you know, Matic is finally doing something. Do you have a view on whether this stops being a Bitcoin led rally at any point in the future?
No, I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's going to continue being Bitcoin led that just spirals onto the other shit. I also think that if we're going for red flags, we will have already been out of the market by end of January or early February. Because the red flags started long ago. And if you want to make an analogy, you look at 21, the red flags also started in January. So we had a full year of red flags. And yeah, people all remembers Matt Damon, right? Fortune favors the brave and that crap at the end of the cycle. And remembers the November 21 insane dog run. But that was not the first. There was a Dodge run before, right? So... It's tough. Like, it's really tough going in and out based on metrics and flags So I think it's better to spread it. One thing I wanted to talk about is, because it's very related, is on the ETF side and why we're early. The reason why we're early is that the institutional sales machine is not yet fully deployed. It's, according to some estimates, it's deployed up to 20% only. And they're looking to basically ramp it up big time into year end. What does that mean, the sales machine? So if we think about it, like, how does the plumbing work on the ETF side? You have ETF buyers are basically retail and discount platforms. You have institutional guys and you have wealth advisors, right? The wealth advisors, they are divided in basically two or three tranches, depending on how you look at it. You have what is called the wirehouses, Merrill Lynch, UBS, and those, and Morgan Stanley and those guys. And then you have the RIAs, which then are split into the independent ones and the non-independent ones. Like the non-independent ones are like Edward Jones, Wells Fargo advisors. What happens there is these guys are, they're very slow. They're very slow in starting to promote an ETF to their people. So they need to see track record. They need to see minimum AUM. They need time. This is, it needs to get approved. So we've seen headlines of basically, for example, in the last 2 weeks of Merrill Lynch and UBS, they're saying they will start offering the ETF to their clients. This is just starting. So we're very far off from on the warehouse side for basically the entire sales, institutional sales machinery to be in place and pushing ETFs to the people that actually want it. It's not they're shoving it up their throats. People actually want it. People are calling Merrill Lynch to say, hey, do you have the ETF, the Bitcoin? Bitcoin, I want Bitcoin.
What do you think of Bitcoin? Is it a good investment? Like that kind of stuff. I think there are $30 trillion of client assets under management across all of the different wealth manager verticals you just mentioned. They're the wirehouses, the like semi-independent shops, then the like the little boutique places. Like a guy will just hang a shingle and like manage other people's money from home. Like $30 trillion. You said you think we're 20% of the way through that. Like I would have put us at like less than
one. What I think is what I know. It's not on an AUM basis. It's on machinery. What percentage of the sales force of people that push ETFs is already enabled, has the tech and the materials and the approval from risk to actually push it? So it's not my estimate. Actually, it's an estimate I just heard, and I had it from a couple sources that we are 20% there. And the ETF guys are thinking we're going to be at 80% by year end.
Wow.
So if that's true, which I believe it to be true, that means that when we get the leverage flush that is going to happen at some point, like minus 20, minus 35, we'll see, you go balls in. Hopefully, if you're a trader, you manage to hedge some of it so you can deploy extra. The risk for those of us who are already in the market is maybe it happens too fast and we can't hedge, you know, because if you're really bullish beyond the immediate term and it's already dropped 10% while you were asleep, what do you do?
Yeah, you just wake up to a down 15% candle. You're not going to be like, well, let me sell now to rebuy it 10% lower.
Yeah, it's very difficult.
And as markets melt up, like the NASDAQ in 1999 or, you know, Bitcoin in 2024, things get very volatile. So it's sort of, it becomes both easier and harder to spot trading opportunities. I would say, how are you positioning in the meme coins right now? I think that's like the summer that we're going to have. It's going to be a meme summer. There's going to be a hat on the Sphere in Vegas. Maybe that's a red flag for you. Maybe that's a bullish signal. Curious to hear what you think about that sort of
I have a large Dodge position, which I wish it were with, to be honest, but it's Dodge. And I have a few shits, you know, guys. If you can, like, I have Puff on Mantle. I'm on Jensen. I just tweeted about replying to one of your tweets. I'm thinking of Jensen as it's like a Bowden play, right? It's,
oh, you mean Jensen Hung?
Yeah, it's the NVIDIA CIO.
Oh, so, dude, this happened to me. So I bought, it's a funny story for you guys. I bought a slug of Joe Bowden like a day after it came out. And then as a result of me buying that, the creator of that Jensen Hung coin just airdrop gifted me some Jensen Hung. He airdropped me like 15,000 units. And it was worth, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 cents. I was like, wow, this is funny. It's, you know, Jensen Huang's face on that giant well-hung COVID meme dude. That's funny. Haha, whatever. And I forgot about it. And I checked my Phantom wallet a couple of days ago, and it was worth $15. So it literally 100x'd in a week. Like, this is just happening left and right. This is the craziest market I've ever fucking seen.
It's wild. The Zin position that I bought 2 months ago on the recommendation of a friend, I put in 1K and I checked my wallet, just ripped. And now people are sending me things like monkey getting haircut on Solana. Look, honestly, it's kind of funny.
This is called the 1000X podcast, and Bitcoin's not going to 1000X. Cum Rocket is what's going to 1000X. So we're in that kind of market, I guess.
I just put monkey getting haircut in the chat. You guys want to take a look at this thing? It's got potential. Amazing. We're all dumbing ourselves down, but that's where the money is.
It's also, I don't think we're dumbing ourselves down. Like, here's how I thought about it. I was like, all right, it's time to mess around in meme coins. Like, let's just give this a try. So I saw that Trump had gone to, you know, multi hundreds of millions market cap. And I thought, all right, you know, it's like a casino. It's like a form of betting on something. It's not just a dog coin or a frog coin. I didn't really get those in the previous cycle. I'm not a Doge master like you guys, but I was like, okay, political things. So then there was a Biden token, which was trading at, you know, tiny market cap relative to Trump. And I'm like, well, this seems undervalued. So I bought it. And then I saw Joe Bowden come out and I just burst out laughing because it was the funniest meme I'd ever seen. And I'm like, all right, I get it now. Basically, the people in crypto hate Joe Biden because he's part of the party that, you know, tried to regulate crypto out of existence. And this is like the counterpoint to the Trump token that clowns on him. And so there's going to be a community around that. And it's a form of political gambling. And so I sold all my Biden, swapped it into Bowden, added other stuff into Bowden. And now that I've actually used Phantom to trade meme coins on Solana, I'm like, I don't want to treat this as dumbing myself down. Like, this is the best casino I've ever played. It's way better than roulette or blackjack. It's way more fun. There's more to it. Things 100x. Your odds are better. Like, I think there's some, this might actually be a real use case, which is just like hyper, like F1 speed gambling on stuff. You know?
Yeah, I agree. My framework is I only buy meme coins where I can talk to the founders. Or the team. Sometimes it's not a founder, it's just a team. Because it's too easy for insiders to basically take the money and run. So it's been costly because of like passing on most meme coins. But my framework starts at the beginning. It's like, that's the filter. If I don't have access to talk to whoever is the team, or whoever is controls most of the supply, controls the social media, I don't want to touch it. Then there are exceptions once things get very large. I mean, Dogecoin doesn't count anymore. WIF is beyond it. Pepe is beyond it. So then that's different. So it's kind of like separating between the large caps and the small caps.
Interesting.
This can be very complicated. Like, study who is holding, when they bought, are there snipers in? Can you look at the holder analysis? It's like, how many snipers are there holding? who is it old money or is it new money? Is it people that are sitting on 300x or is it people that are sitting on a 2x?
How do you do this analysis? Are you just sitting there with like Etherscan and an abacus, like moving beads around, or are you using some Nansen Pro or something a little bit more advanced?
It's Etherscan. You don't need Nansen for that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would think that it's like when I look at a dog coin with a multi-billion dollar market cap, I think of it as just random noise, and I've never figured out how to trade the mega caps. But I do feel like if you get into something early enough, it's just a pretty excellent call option.
Yeah, I agree. Now most of these coins go to zero, like 99, over 99%, they retraced in full. So it is a fun casino, but it's not easy.
So do you build in like a ratchet type mechanism where, for example, you buy a meme coin, then at 3x's, do you like take your initial investment out so that if it goes to zero, you're protected, or do you like to go all in?
Well, the thing is, if I get to a meme coin, I get in early usually.
Is there a level where you take anything out?
No. Usually, I just ride to Valhalla. On that side, it's I treat it as a lottery ticket. So often round trip them. Also, the thing is, when you are getting into coins where you know the founders, it's hard to sell because you're just fucking with people. You know, somebody launches a coin and then you get in because you get in early because you're a friend and they know you, and then it goes up 10x and you just dump it all. It's not nice. So it's a matter of relationships, right? So yeah, I most more often than not, I round trip all my meme coin gains. That's a sad reality.
So what percentage of your 70 line items would you say are memes right now? There's 100 line items, sorry.
Four, five, let's five. See. One, two, three, four.
I used to look at this type of trading and shit on it, and now I'm like having so much fun. But
it just 3x'd. Your coin just 3x since we started recording, and it's not live. Otherwise, I would think that it's actually the listeners that are pumping it. No.
I mean, not financial advice. All this shit is going to zero, probably. But
to be completely honest, I can't remember a time where meme coins have done this. Just across the board. I mean, normally you have specific concentrations, right? So you used to have the meme coins pop off for each ecosystem, and then the DEXs pop off for each ecosystem. And so for example, when AVAX said that they were going to be investing, they were going to raise an ecosystem fund, and their coins would pop off, and it would be the Solana coins and the Phantom coins and blah, blah, blah. And it would sort of go in this ecosystem cycle. Now it's a little bit of just a free for all. It's just, you just launch a coin with a funny name and it just goes up. You know, the concept of a Joe Bowden wasn't really there in 2020, 2021 as much as it is today. I mean, this is definitely, in the grand scheme of things, a golden era of meme coins. We're going to look back on this time as, the Cambrian explosion. But I guess what I'll say is that normally in historic cycles, and I don't know whether it's the right thing to compare this, but in historic cycles, things tend to get crazier after the all-time high break, not into the all-time high break. That's not when they're the craziest. So in theory, we have a lot more to go.
Well, will this cycle be, question for both of you guys, will this cycle be a meme coin summer, or will we be over meme coins soon and we'll be on to like the narrative summer, like AI coins or something?
I think we just continue. We already had an AI summer, winter, whatever we want to call it. I think we're going to have another one. I think meme coins will cool down, and then we're gonna have another one. I'm on the super cycle thing that basically this just keeps on going. We're in adoption phase, and we finally enabled Bitcoin to be adopted. It's just getting started. This is many years in the making. It's so much pent up demand, which also means so much of that wealth spills over into altcoins and meme coins. So it's like, you like it or not, this is the way of the market. And also, it's like launching meme coins is so easy.
So do you consider some other alternative L1s like Near or Solana or ETH to be the next thing that's going to go, best risk reward for you?
It's not. No, for me, it's okay. I missed Near. Near already run. Near kind of like re-labeled as an AI chain. It's already run. I want to buy in a pullback, not here. By the way, it's something I wanted to say. It's like, I'm not buying new shit. I'm like redeploying from some shit to other shit. Market is too hot to be putting new money. Like, the thing is, I got here all the way from the bottom to the top full long. If that's not you, you don't put money here. I think here is you wait for that pullback and just eat it up and be patient. Otherwise, you're going to get fucked. It's a matter of basically having a framework. This is euphoria levels.
Yeah, I would agree with that pretty wholeheartedly. The kind of interesting thing though is that for a lot of coins, we're not at euphoria levels yet. It's sort of just BTC. So I think there's a reasonable scenario where, you know, BTC can sell up to 65K and Dogecoin can double in that time as people rotate. I mean, it's sort of hard to say. Like, I think Bitcoin, the RR for BTC is tough, but the RR for everything else is okay. I mean, Doge is up less than BTC. Since October, it looks like. So kind of nuts, huh? Wouldn't have expected that, that's for sure.
I mean, it makes sense when retail, like, I just read that, it may have been something you posted, Jonah, that volume on crypto exchanges are at 25% from 2021 levels. So yeah, there is a lot of leverage coming in. We are all, like, a lot of people in crypto are levered to the tit, but there's so many people that are still haven't come back, and they will come back. And when they come back, they're gonna look out and they're not gonna buy Bitcoin. They're gonna buy WIF and BOG and Dogecoin on Coinbase.
Alex, is there a price level where you look at it and you just say, all right, F this, I'm out, I'm selling half myself?
I was thinking to sell 40% at 75.
It's pretty close.
No, but that was before the price action made me change my mind, because every time we flash, we just buy it back up. So that tells me that we continue. So yeah, it's my targets are really, they change. Right now I'm thinking also like possibly at 85. The answer is I don't operate with levels like that. Do you?
Generally, yes. Just for the simple reason of it helps enforce discipline. But I always have the right to reserve change my mind. What I try to do is I try to just check my bias of when I set the level and I've revised it upwards two or three times. That's generally a danger zone. So right now, I mean, basically what I'm thinking is anywhere from 90K to 100K, I'm scaling out substantial amounts. But other than that, just hold on for the fucking ride.
In crude oil, when I'm super bullish or super bearish, usually I don't set price levels to get in or out. I set levels associated with fundamental data that drives crude oil. So like, I'll say, all right, I'm going to exit my crude oil length when refinery margins drop below a certain level, or I'm going to buy as much oil as I can when I see XYZ happening at OPEC, like external fundamental data. In crypto, I'm attempting to monitor this. This is like my first time getting a crazy bull swing right in crypto. And I would say I'm trying to apply the commodities framework, and I'm not going to look at Bitcoin's price as a signal for when to get out. I'm going to look at metrics, like on-chain metrics like MVRVZ, or maybe a little bit, something a little bit more qualitative, like the Matt Damon Brave commercial. When that shit starts coming back, maybe it's time to get out. I'm not going to try to set price levels because that feels kind of arbitrary, you know, for the reasons you just mentioned, Alex. I don't know. What do you think of that?
On that, two things. One is crude doesn't have that dry tail because it doesn't move it enough for returns to be truly exponential. I mean, that's so it makes more sense to use fundamentals. On top of that, it's kind of like varying extreme circumstances. It just ranges. It's a wide range, but it's been ranging for 15 years, right? We leave aside that 2014 dump, and we leave aside the 2020, and it's a ranging asset. So it makes more sense, like getting out when things, when fundamental metrics tell you to get out, it's okay because you're not going to miss 400%.
Right.
On the other, a way to tackle this uncertainty around where to get out, I think better than that is using funding rates and just a matter of feeling the market. And when regularly you go and you take off a little bit, just a little bit off the table, either by selling or by hedging. So when that correction comes, you are psychologically in a very good place to manage risk and decide if you sell more or you buy back, or you buy back and put leverage on. So that also takes away the need for picking the top. We don't know. The thing is, we don't know if that's going to be a local top or a global top. Is that it? We have no fucking idea. We can have exceptions when very, very extraordinary things happen, such as the Fed changing dramatically their view on the market, or say there is like a major war like Russia and Ukraine, things like that are really extreme. And then you go like, fuck it, I'm out of this. Or FTX, you know, you start hearing about FTX. It's like I don't care if it's local, top, global, whatever, I'm out. So given that uncertainty, just by applying that is kind of, the way I think about it is like playing an accordion. So the accordion always has air inside. And you're just playing and you inflate and deflate and inflate and deflate and you always keep in a bull market X amount of air in there. And every now and then you take it out and then you put it back in and just keep on playing.
So you're trading around your position.
Trading around positions. Yeah. Very, very constantly. Yeah.
Definitely a smart way of doing it. Requires a lot of energy and focus, which we know you have. I guess one question for you market structure wise, why is basis and funding so extreme right now? You would think that now that the ETF exists, any pool of capital in the world, like 20% IRR is an amazing percentage to earn if you're, you know, a fund manager or just anyone running money. So why wouldn't somebody just go and buy the BlackRock ETF, sell the CME future in infinite size and collect that basis? Like why does that exist now that there's no barriers to entry and the ETFs have debottlenecked access to the sort of the long Bitcoin leg of the basis trade?
Well, we have us basically. If it's us getting tits levered,
except none of us are running leverage. It must not be us, but people like
but them. No, yeah. But people like us, like our circles. You know, it's the crypto natives, the people who've been around for a long time, that basically also most of them, I'm pretty sure they miss the bottom and they miss the beginning and they miss the middle. And they're getting in. There's a lot of people getting in with size, levered up, starting on the 50s, you know, out of FOMO. And what you're saying, why? I mean, it's a good question. I think the I don't have the answer, but I think it's a matter of, it takes time to put those trades on an infinite size. You need to go and raise funds, put the legal structure, get the approvals, and eventually you go and you start putting it on. Now, let's put it this way. If everybody was thinking that basis was going to compress down to zero, well, what do you do? Well, you don't try to put a legal structure. You're not prepared to put the trade on because you don't expect the trade to be available. Now, that trade is available. Well, we have to be thinking there is people who are working behind the scenes to put that trade in an infinite size, and it's going to happen. Eventually, it's going to happen.
That makes sense. I agree with your point. I think a lot of on the first part of that is a lot of people missed this run up. A lot of people weren't allocated as fully as they, you know, were supposed to, and I think that stems from the fact that there was a lot of, you know, there was just a lot of fear during the bear market, and it sort of did change something in people's minds, where in 2021 people would be 100 to 150% exposed and they would feel normal. And after the bear market, I think a lot of crypto natives, especially given the wealth that they had, wanted to preserve it, so they were 30 to 50% allocated to the market, 60% allocated to the market. And only recently has that shift in the mind again. Okay, 150%. I need to be there. I need to go back. So that's why I do get a little bit worried.
Yeah, and also it's like, why is all this meme thing happening as well? It's not only because it's easy now, right? Solana makes it so easy, but at the same time, is you miss most of the move, but you still have significant wealth sitting on your crypto. So suddenly you feel rich. At the same time, you feel FOMO. You're like, fuck, I missed most of it. What the fuck do I do? Okay, let's long Avalanche. You know?
I think we're seeing that now. I mean, this is when majors catch up. You know, when people really do have that FOMO. They go, fuck. Matic actually looks pretty nice just from that trade, from that structure, barely up off the bottom. Everybody, you know, people are going to pile in. Then they're going to start rotating to the things that they know. They missed the memes. They missed BTC. Now it's time for the majors.
Also, Sol, I think as soon as this FTX deal, the FTX locked Sol deal, it's closer to getting done. Sol flies all the way up to their all-time highs, straight line.
Yeah, when do you think that selling is finished?
I understand they started about 3 weeks ago. And they're done. They're 50% done. That's my understanding. I may be wrong, but that's my understanding. So a few more weeks.
Yeah, I mean, if you take away selling pressure on Solana right now, there's some explosive upside potential there. That's something that I've been underpositioned on this entire rally, and I feel that's where I feel FOMO. I feel stupid, especially now that I'm using it and I realize how good the experience is. Although, like, what I still can't wrap my head around is how, like, basically zero gas fees translates tokenomic-wise to you know, market cap and value. But I think I'm mid-curving it when I go up that mental pathway.
Because it's a meme coin at the end. If we're doing valuing Solana on a PE basis, it's insanely overvalued. Like I stopped checking, but it must be a PE on the thousands right now.
Yep.
So
meanwhile, Joe Bowden, market solid, yeah. Fundamentals, solid PE. No, I'm joking. Do you think at some point there's been one notable underperformer this whole rally? It's been Ethereum, the Ethereum ecosystem, the high gas fees, the absence of meme coinery there, and the NFTs going on inside of Ethereum. Do you think that an ETH ETF is going to be like a big sort of catapult event for that ecosystem and that token price? Or do you think that it's going to lag this whole rally?
Well, I don't expect that ETF until next year.
Mm-hmm.
When that happens, yeah. The question is, when does the market start front running it? I don't know when that's going to happen. But yeah, once that happens, it should outperform massively. But yeah, like also it's I don't expect it, and the market has been changing its odds from basically 60% or a little bit higher at the end of the year, at the beginning of the year, to like more like 40% right now, maybe even 30. It's tough to look at those metrics because they are those implied odds. They're basically that we taken from Polymarket, which is a tiny, 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 tiny market. So determining the odds of a massive multi-billion-dollar market based on the odds of a tiny one, it's kind of like Maybe better to be using options for that, which is something I haven't done. Use options to try to determine what are the true implied odds of the ETF. If somebody's doing that, I would love to see that analysis.
Yeah, we appreciate you coming on for the pod. This is a fun one.
Cool, guys. Yeah, I think we covered it all, basically.